Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy speculation and advice. Now, along with the guys from GuillotineLeagues.com, here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly. I am Paul Charchi, and my co-hosts today are Scott Fish and Brian Johnson. Hello, guys.
What's going on, Charch?
It is a weird, weird week. We've had lots of COVID cases that have affected a lot of things, including a Tuesday game against the Steelers and Ravens that we don't know if that game's going to be played. Although, if history is any indication here, the league is going to do everything possible to play this game, and I believe it's going to happen, but it creates a conundrum for a lot of fantasy owners who are going to have to make decisions for those early Sunday kickoff games on who to start and not knowing for sure if that Tuesday game is going to go.
If you can make a lateral move or an almost lateral move by taking players from that game out and starting anyone else, you just got to do it, in my opinion.
We'll have some good pivots for you during the show, but the tough ones are the Pittsburgh wide receivers, right?
The Pittsburgh wide receivers are the biggest problem.
You brought those in.
Correct. Those are the guys that were ranked the highest, and those are the toughest ones to play right now. In my opinion, again, we've talked about this in shows past. For your friends and family leagues, for the majority of you, the best thing is to have a conditional selection that you can make for another player who plays on Sunday. And use that player in the event that your Steelers don't go. Use a conditional player. We talked about it before. If that's not available for you for whatever reason, then to me, anybody who gets an AB grade, I would definitely play over Ravens and Steelers. And maybe even in some cases, players who we give a C grade over the course of this show. Yeah. Over Steelers and Ravens.
Yeah. Even with the great, I think that I'm probably with you, Charch. I think it's getting played. Mm-hmm. I still got most of them out of my lineups just in case at this point. If I have close enough, you know, comparables.
Yeah, right. Brian, let's go to our first matchup, which is Las Vegas taking on Atlanta. And for Las Vegas and Josh Jacobs, there's a little bit of a trickier matchup than it seems because Atlanta's a sneaky good run defense.
Yeah, after being like a bullseye matchup for 5 years at least. But so I'm just giving Josh Jacobs a B here. Just when it looked like Jacob was gonna lose significant carries to Devontae Booker last week, he dominates that category 17-5. He should do the same against Atlanta. But again, they're no slouch against the run. They've allowed just 4 rushing touchdowns to running backs this year. No back has topped 90 rushing yards against Atlanta, which is insane. And Atlanta has yielded the 4th most carries to running backs in goal-to-go scenarios, and Josh Jacobs is a beast, to say the least. So you're still going to start him with a B. And again, unlike years past, like running backs would catch like 10 catches minimum a game against Atlanta has... Well, it doesn't matter because Alec Ingold had more targets than Josh Jacobs and Devontae Booker last week combined.
All the early talk about throwing to Josh Jacobs is not material.
So there's no receiving angle for Jacobs, but he still gets the B. There is a receiving angle for Darren Waller. He definitely gets an A. Has scored in 4 of his last 6, and here come the Falcons, who have allowed the 4th most receptions, 2nd most yards, and the most touchdowns to tight ends. So an A for Waller. Nelson Aguilar, going to give him a C. He's had 3 games with 4 or more catches all year. 4, 5, and 6 were the catch totals.
That's it.
But he scored in each of those games and racked up 239 yards in those 3 games. So if he gets the ball, things happen. He has 6 touchdowns on the year, too. That's a lot. That's like a lot more than like most of the top 20 preseason wide receivers right now. So I'm giving Aguilar a C. Atlanta is top 7 in most targets and yards allowed to wide receivers and 3rd in yards allowed to the position. So a C for Aguilar and a B for Derek Carr. 19 passing touchdowns to only 3 interceptions. That's crazy impressive. That's like MVP caliber numbers there. And he's been very fantasy friendly too. At least 2 passing touchdowns in 7 of his last 9 games. And the one of the games he fell short in, one of the 2, was the monsoon game in Cleveland, which we always reference. It seems like every week. We always got to go back to
the stat breaker.
It wasn't a game. It was more like a season, a monsoon season in Cleveland for a month.
That's right.
And Atlanta's allowed the 2nd most passing touchdowns and passing in passing yards. So a B for Carr. Over to the Atlanta side. We'll start with Julio Jones. Sounds like he'll play with the hamstring injury.
No way I don't trust
Questionable.
Him.
Yeah, and if he does, will he be a decoy? So just to see if he suits up, Las Vegas is allowing 177 yards per game to opposing wide receivers. That is 10th most, and they've allowed a receiver to top 100 yards and score a touchdown in three of their last five games. But if one Falcons receiver is going to do that, it's more than likely going to be Calvin Ridley, who gets the A. Has posted at least 90 yards or a touchdown in every game he has started and finished this year. In his two healthy starts without Julio, Ridley totaled 23 targets and averaged 123 yards. He has a favorable matchup against Trayvon Mullen, who is allowing a passer rating of 109 in his coverage and has given up four touchdowns. So an A for Ridley. Hayden Hurst, just a C here, coming off the goose egg.
Plus he's hurt.
Yeah, he's banged up, but he should play. Raiders allow roughly five catches and 52 yards per game to tight ends. Hurst averages four catches and 41 yards per game. That's with the goose egg. So in the tight end wasteland, I'll give him a C here. But monitor his status. Like Scott said, he is a little banged up. And Matt Ryan, too, another guy you really can't trust. Going to give him a C. The Raiders, outside of the, take out the Raiders monsoon game in Cleveland, though, and Las Vegas has allowed 321 passing yards and 2.2 touchdowns per game over the last 7 weeks. Atlanta throws the ball fourth most in the league. Julio's health is obviously huge for Ryan, but even if Julio sits, you still give him a C, but you can look elsewhere in one quarterback leagues. And Todd Gurley has been ruled out. I was going to give him a C, as bad as he has been, but Brian Hill now draws the start. Everyone's clamoring for the waiver wire already, probably before they even heard this, so I'll give him a C, even though it's a bad matchup. Since week four, no opposing back has topped 70 rushing yards against the Raiders, but they have surrendered the second most touchdowns to running backs this year. So
you're just hoping he punches one in.
That was definitely the hope with Todd Gurley, because
that's all he gives you. That's a goal.
He was doing it too, though.
Yeah, 13 goal line carries for Gurley, which is third most, and he converted six of them, so he was good at the goal line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the one place where you could count on Todd Gurley. It certainly wasn't in a yards per carry format where he's like 3.5 yards per carry on the season. It's been terrible. Arizona takes on New England. Scott, last week we saw the shoulder injury for Kyler Murray, and we got his first sort of middling production game, and now he's got a tricky but not impossible matchup with New England. What do you think?
Right, and he came off on Friday. He came off the injury report, so completely clear, fine and clear now. It still might affect him a little, but I still have an A grade. He was still an A start, even middling, so I still have an A grade on him. He has multiple touchdowns in, let's see, every single game this year. he's averaging over 3 per game in his last 5. He only has 4 games this entire year under 60 yards rushing. That's like an extra touchdown right there.
It is.
Just added in rushing. DeAndre Hopkins, A grade. I don't care that he's going to get Stephon Gilmore, who's been, you know, he's
probably gets
up.
Gilmore, right?
Yeah, he's banged up, so if he plays. But remember when Belichick used to take away your best option?
Yeah. I don't know if he can do that anymore.
Metcalf, 92 and a touch. Lockett, 67 and a touch. Diggs, 6 for 92. Both Fuller and Cooks over 80 yards.
Yeah.
I mentioned all those games because those are games Gilmore played in. So.
Oh, interesting. All right.
And in the last 2 weeks, he's allowed nearly 130 yards to wide receivers. So I think Hopkins could beat him, honestly. I know that they're looking for that matchup. I still have an A grade on Hopkins.
Although, over Hopkins' last month or so, other than that Hail Mary catch, his numbers have been pretty pedestrian.
Yeah. Pats have allowed touchdowns to 12 different receivers. They have the third most touchdowns allowed at the position. They've allowed another 5 to top 80 scoreless yards. So I'm giving Christian Kirk a C. I think he's a sneaky play this week, especially if Gilmore plays. You know, he'll have, well, either way, if Gilmore does, Gilmore's not going to touch him at all. So I like him this week. I have a B on Drake. The Patriots have really clamped down on running backs recently. They've only allowed 3 running backs over 100 total yards. That's rushing plus receiving, and all 3 took 19 plus touches. But Drake's upside is that he gets 15 plus touches in all but one game he's played, and they've allowed about 36 yards receiving per game to running back. So I think Drake can get it done here.
All right,
Edmonds, I'm putting back on the bench as he was relegated to backup duties with just 6 touches last week.
So frustrating.
On the other side, Cam Newton is getting a B, and it's once again his rushing. Last week he did it with his passing, but listen to his home game passing yards at Gillette Stadium. 155, 162, 157, 98 and 118.
So bad.
Conversely, on the road, averaging over 300 yards per game.
Weird.
At home, at Gillette, not getting it done. So he should get more rushing opportunities this week, though. It's a team Arizona has allowed 180 rushing yards to quarterbacks over the last 4 weeks. And part of that is due to their 40% blitz rate. They're forcing quarterbacks outside, rushing outside. Cam has played three teams with similar blitz rates.
Mm-hmm.
He has 35 carries for 150 yards and four touchdowns in those three games. So his passing yards totals, I've mentioned, were bad. But in those games, those heavy blitz games, he rushed the ball on average nine times.
Nine times.
We got scolded for missing a nine times.
In fact, he has rushed the ball at least nine times.
Nine times.
Seven different games. So I got a B grade on him. Unfortunately, the return of Harry made Myers a less lovable option, and Bird had his first big game of the year. But here's the problem. Bird had more targets over the last four games. Myers has only missed four snaps, one each game. Harry had more targets than both of them last week, but put up just 41 yards. It's a mess. I don't know where, and we've mentioned the passing yards totals. I got them all on the bench. Harrison White, I'm giving both C grades to. Burkhead went down with the injury, so he clears the way for White to grab passes. He got six catches last week. Weirdly, James White outsnapped Damian Harris last week. I did not see that coming.
No, I didn't either. He'd been so lightly used for several games.
Yeah, I have C grades on Harrison White. Harris got 12 touches. White got 11 touches. I can see them both with double-digit touches here. It's all about Michelle. If he comes in and plays, takes away snaps, I hope it's just that minimal five, six, seven touches that allows both of those guys in double digits.
That all makes sense. Carolina goes to Minnesota. And let's start with the running game and Mike Davis. It will be another Mike Davis game, by the way. The Vikings are top 10 in allowing rushing attempts and rushing yards to opposing running backs. But their performance has been very volatile. Over the past four games, in two, they held down a very good Green Bay running attack and Chicago's running attack to just 53 yards per game. But then in the other two, they allowed a struggling Dallas rushing attack and Detroit's rushing attack to average 143 yards. Go figure. You would have think those have been flipped. I don't expect much through the air either way, though. No back has topped 36 receiving yards against the Vikings. They've been great at stopping opposing backs through the air, and that's been a lot of where Mike Davis has helped, and that's why he gets a B grade in this game. Let's go to the passing game. Teddy Bridgewater fully expected to resume quarterbacking duties here. Startable against a yielding Viking secondary. Aside from Chicago's non-functional offense, the Vikings are giving up 281 yards and almost three touchdown passes per game.
Oof. Not good.
Teddy is not normally that kind of guy. And each of his receivers have positive matchups. But he tops out at a C because he's just not an explosive player. He has topped two touchdown passes once in his last 19 games.
Yeah.
So
I know it's ultimate revenge scenario, basically. I would have loved to have seen P.J. Walker one more game.
See, I don't think Teddy has revenge in him.
No, I don't think it doesn't.
I said scenario. I didn't say he's going to capitalize on it.
I'll put it to you this way. In Minnesota, when Teddy Bridgewater runs onto the field, he would get far more. We're their fans in the stands.
Yeah.
He would have gotten a far bigger ovation than Kirk Cousins would have gotten.
I don't doubt that.
It's not even close. Yeah. Not even close. All right, let's talk about his receivers. Beginning with Curtis Samuel. It's got a matchup I love. Samuel has been a top five scoring wide receiver over the last 5 weeks, thanks to his five touchdowns and his regular use as a runner. He overwhelmingly lines up in the slot, where he matches up against Vikings rookie Jeff Gladney. You might be wondering, how's Jeff Gladney doing this year? Well, he has allowed the most passing touchdowns in his coverage than any cornerback. Well, for that matter, any player, period, and it's by two, that bad.
More
he's
like
given up seven touchdowns. Yes, Jeff Sadney. Oh, that might stick, I'm afraid. Let's hope that's not
the
case.
It's a new screen door.
Sorry,
right,
Jeff.
Yep.
So, B grade on Curtis Samuel. B grade on DJ Moore. I like that P.J. Walker gave him a ton of volume last week and more than Teddy ever did. And then Moore responded with a very big game last week. He runs from all over the field. He'll most often see rookie Cameron Danzler, who's giving up a passer rating of 130. So I like DJ Moore here. And let's just hope Teddy learns from a little bit what PJ Walker showed last week. You can target DJ Moore. It's okay to do that. Robbie Anderson gets a C grade. He hasn't scored since the opener. And his speed is frankly a mismatch for Teddy's arm. But the matchup is good against Chris Boyd. I believe he is startable in a pinch. Boyd allows 77% of the passes in his coverage to be completed. Let's go to the Viking side. Dalvin Cook, obvious A grade. And without Adam Thielen, who is very unlikely to go, I expect the Vikings to do what comes naturally here. And that's run the ball. They don't need an excuse to run the ball. But if we're going to take Adam Thielen away, I expect that much more running. So Cook gets the A grade. Kirk Cousins is on the bench. I think you have to avoid these low-volume games from Kirk. And if you like me and you think they're just going to run against a bad run defense, this is when you don't want to play Kirk. He averages 27 passes per game. When he's below 27, Kirk's average game, 202 yards and 1.4 touchdowns. That is not a starting grade. Without guard Ezra Cleveland last week, the Vikings offensive line looked brutal, and I'm worried about Kirk's ability to get in a clean pocket as well. Justin Jefferson's the only other Viking that you'll want to start. A B grade here. He typically crushes it when he's heavily targeted, and without Thielen, that should happen here. Jefferson has at least 86 yards in five of the six games in which he has seen five targets.
Mm-hmm.
He also has all four of his touchdowns in games where he's had those five targets, and I think he gets the five targets here. Favorable matchup against a Panthers defense allowing 171 yards per game to receivers. And the only other guys that I think you'd want to talk about, well, no, actually.
What about Rudolph? I mean, Irv Smith, unlikely to go. I mean, maybe a Mark Andrews pivot there?
Yeah, I think maybe. I mean, in a pinch, you could go that direction if you wanted to. I don't have a starting grade here, but that makes sense.
Thielen and Irv Smith out. I mean,
yeah, they got to go to something.
Even if it's only 23 passes, there's got to be something.
You would think so. I'm nervous about this passing game for the Vikings in this matchup.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, nine players, many of whom are available on the waiver wire. We call it Take a Chance on Me. Guys you would not normally start, but you can this week for a variety of reasons. We'll tell you who they are in this, a very tumultuous Week 12. Stay tuned to Fantasy Football Weekly. Nine players not normally in your starting lineup. We'll tell you who they are and which ones you can, many of these you'll be able to pick up off of the waiver wire. We begin at the quarterback position, and Scott Fish, who you got?
Okay. I know he's looked terrible. He doesn't look, he's probably on your waiver wire because he's looked so bad. But even really bad QBs can find themselves startable in the right matchup. I have Carson Wentz. They're going to be behind a lot. Seattle just lost Dunbar in their and literally every QB to face Seattle has had either 300 yards and or multiple touchdowns or both. They've allowed six rushing touchdowns too, and Wentz runs them in from time to time. He's got four rushing on the year.
He does.
It's a spot.
As for as bad as he's looked, he usually ends up with multiple touchdowns in the game one way or another.
Yeah.
The catch is, it's the turnovers. Did you know that Carson Wentz leads the league in fumbles and interceptions?
Wow.
Do you know how hard it is to be leading in both of the turnover categories? If there were a third turnover category, Carson Wentz would lead that too. I don't know what it would be. Maybe something like eating a football and then regurgitating it into the mouth of an opposing player like a baby bird. Maybe that would be it. And Carson Wentz would lead that too.
Probably like Brett Favre or Dave Craig or something.
Dave Craig, he was an epic fumbler.
Yes, he was.
One time years ago, I did a TV show with Dave Craig.
Okay.
And so I teased him on air about the fumbling. He was so pissed. Oh, he did not take that well at all. So if you ever run into Dave Craig, or Dave Craig, if you're listening, lighten up, dude.
He had the Jim Everett reaction.
He kind of did. All right, Brian, you're taking a chance on me, quarterback.
All right. 76 degrees, cloudy, no chance of rain. That's the weather in Jacksonville for Baker Mayfield. He survived monsoon season in Cleveland, understandably barely posted any numbers over the last month.
Well, no touchdown since week 7.
But I'm attributing a lot of that to the weather. I believe there was a bye mixed in there as well, but
yes,
he's passed the weather gauntlet, and before all that mess, Baker had thrown a touchdown in every game. He was averaging more than two passing touchdowns per game on the season. The last four quarterbacks who faced the Jaguars have hit at least 270 passing yards and two passing touchdowns, and Mayfield's a bit of a road warrior over his career. It's not the longest career, but a pretty good sample size. He's averaging nearly two passing touchdowns on the road and less than 1.5 passing touchdowns at home, so Cleveland's itching to air it out. They got to break the rust off of get the rust off of his shoulder. So Baker Mayfield at Jaguars.
I'm going with Philip Rivers. Over the past 5 weeks, which includes a game against this week's opponent, Tennessee, Rivers has averaged a healthy 291 yards and two touchdowns. He's playing better than I think people realize. Rivers played well against Tennessee 2 weeks ago, and prior to facing a broken Baltimore passing game, Tennessee was allowing 296 passing yards and 2.4 touchdowns per game. I would take 296 and 2.4
sure.
from Philip Rivers. Let's go to the running back position. Scott, who's your take a chance on me runner?
By the way, on Philip Rivers, -3 yards rushing on the season. It's going
down.
My running back is Boston Scott. Last week, again, he vultured a score, had 8 touches. I think this is a game where he's going to get more touches. I find the Eagles are going to be behind, have a lot of offensive snaps trying to catch up there. This is a Seattle team that's allowed the 5th most rushing touchdowns, 4th most running back receptions, 5th most running back receptions, receiving yards. And the secondary running back has scored a bunch. Chase Edmonds did it last week. Malcolm Brown and Daryl Henderson did it a couple weeks ago. Jamichael Hasty and Jerick McKinnon have done the backup running, the second running back comes in and gets scores. Yep. Why not?
Brian, your take a chance on me runner.
Frank Gore at home against Miami. Count them up. This will be Frank Gore's 6th revenge game of the season. It's been 2 Buffaloes.
And it's a homecoming of sorts if it's in Miami.
Well, it's in Jersey, unfortunately.
Oh, it is.
It's the second time they played. But
right.
We had 2 Buffaloes, a Miami, a San Fran, and an Indy this year for revenge games for Frank Gore.
Wow, it's impressive.
But LaMichael Perrine on IR right now for the Jets, so it looks like we'll have a bell cow on our hands against the Dolphins, who are fresh off allowing 160-plus rushing yards and 2 rushing touchdowns to Denver running backs last week. These teams met in week 6. Gore had 46 rushing yards on 16 carries. Not great. But Perrine and Ty Johnson combined for 69 very nice yards on 10 carries in that game. So give all that to Gore in this one. Why not, Adam Gase? Frank Gore.
All right. I am going with Wayne Gallman against Cincinnati. The Bengals are allowing 126 rushing yards per game, 4th most, on 5.2 yards per carry. That's 2nd most. No Devontae Freeman again. He's on IR. Gallman has scored 4 in 4 consecutive games. And over those 4 games, his rushing attempts have increased every week. He was all up to 18 rushing attempts last week. I think he gets back to that kind of territory this week, and he's a very good start. In fact, I think he's inside my top 10 this week, Wayne Gallman.
You're gall in.
I'm gall in on Gallman. Let's go to the receiver position. Scott, who you got?
I'm going with Jalen Reagor. Sensing a trend here with my 3 picks?
Yes, I am.
Once again.
You're picking on a bad Seattle
defense in secondary. Even if Ertz returns, it more than likely means Richard Rodgers' 6 targets are going over to Ertz. Maybe there's a little extra for Ertz there. But Reagor has at least 5 targets in each of the last 3 weeks. His yardage hasn't been there yet, but the Seahawks have allowed the most yards and 2nd most touchdowns to wide receivers. The Jeffrey return only took away Fulgham. It didn't affect Reagor at all.
Not at all. Yeah, Rager's the go-to guy. I like him in this game a lot.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, you're taking a chance for me, receiver.
Cleveland's Rashard Higgins at Jacksonville. I'm not going to mention why Rashard Higgins hasn't done anything over the last month. Yes, I will. It was a stupid monsoon. But over Jacksonville's last 4 games, they're allowing more than 15 catches and 210 yards per game to opposing wide receivers. They've surrendered 6 total touchdowns to the position over those 4 games. And the Jaguars have also allowed 100-yard receiver in each of their last 6 games. Yes, Jarvis Landry could be that guy for Cleveland, but it's not going to be Kadarrell Hodge. It very well could be Rashard Higgins at Jacksonville.
Yeah, I like that play. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not like Jarvis Landry's got big upside in him.
No,
Higgins
no.
has got more upside, big play potential than Jarvis Landry.
It's he or Hooper in the red zone for sure.
My take a chance on me receiver, and our final one for this segment is Jakeem Grant, the Miami water bug, who goes up against the Jets. Since Preston Williams' injury, Jakeem Grant has been on the field for 80% of the Jets' plays, and Sorry, Miami's plays. I said Jets. For Miami's plays, Grant is a sneaky play against a Jets defense that has lost starting cornerbacks, Blasuin Austin, who went on IR, and then they just outright cut Pierre Desir, and he earned it.
Yep.
New York secondary was already bottom five with those guys, and in their first game without them, they got smoked by Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, who combined for 217 yards and two touchdowns. And there's a chance Stu Beard comes back for that game.
Yep.
Oh, I would like that.
Yep.
Tua may not play this one.
Questionable.
And we'll find out. Also, let's find out what's happening more between Cleveland and Jacksonville. You've already talked about some of the players you like in this one, Brian, but let's start with Nick Chubb and the running game. Chubb has been very good since coming back.
Yeah, definitely. 20 carries last week. Kareem Hunt still siphoned off 13 and the rushing score, unfortunately. But Chubb basically seeing bell cow rushing usage, even with Kareem Hunt in the fold. He was not targeted, though, for the second time in three games last week. In fact, Chubb has not seen more than one target at any point this season. That's just not an aspect of his game, unfortunately. But whatever.
Well, although he's a serviceable receiver.
He can catch.
They just don't throw it to him.
They barely throw it to Kareem Hunt, either. We'll talk about that in a second. But the Jaguars do own the fifth highest opponent rushing play percentage and have allowed five rushing touchdowns to running backs over as many games. So an A for Chubb and a B for Kareem Hunt. Mentioned the 13 carries and a touchdown last week. He was the only Cleveland back to see a target, although it was just one. But the Jags have yielded the fifth most red zone targets to running backs, and there should be plenty of meat left on the bone for Hunt on the ground in this one. So a B for Hunt, and I'm going to give Jarvis Landry a B as well. I just talked about how bad the Jaguars have been against wide receivers. They've allowed a 100-yard receiver in each of their last six games, six wide receiver touchdowns over their last four. And for that reason, Rashard Higgins was my take a chance on me wide receiver. And I really like Austin Hooper's matchup as well. I can give him a B. There's a potential here, though. The Jaguars are awful against the position. They're allowing the most yards per catch and touchdowns to tight ends, and they've surrendered at least one tight end touchdown in six of their last nine games. And for all those positive matchups for the pass catchers, Baker Mayfield was my take a chance on me quarterback. And over to the Jaguars side, not a lot to talk about here. I'm going to start. We have a new quarterback. He's going to be the grand finale. I'll stay with James Robinson.
Do it in the order you want.
I'll stay with James Robinson. Through 10 weeks, Robinson is RB4 overall and RB6 on a points-per-game basis in PPR. That's crazy.
But that says more about the state of running backs in fantasy football this year than it does about James Robinson being a great talent.
It does, but only the 28th running back in NFL history to log 1,000-plus combo yards through his first 10 career games. The only undrafted running back to do so in NFL history. And he's battling negative game scripts every week.
All the time.
And sadly, he's probably going to do that in this one as well. The Browns have only allowed one total running back touchdown over their last four games. And during that same four-game stretch, only Josh Jacobs has topped 70 rushing yards against Cleveland. And he did that on 31 carries. So I'll give a B to Robinson based on his volume, but he's going to have to work to really come through. DJ Chark was going to get a B, but he has been ruled out. He had a great matchup because there's basically no one to match up against him or any other wide receiver. Denzel Ward, the best cornerback on Cleveland, was the last guy standing. He's been ruled out of this game. So it's Laviska Shenault and Chris Connolly is out.
No, Connolly's out too. Keelan Cole is your other
Cole.
Guy.
Cole
and Shenault are both playable.
Yeah, they are.
They are.
I'll give them both a C.
Cole's been decent this year too.
He has.
For a 40 to 60 yard game guy.
He's the more safer PPR option between the two, but Shenault has a very high floor in this one as Jacksonville likely plays catch up with Mike Glennon at quarterback. He's on the bench.
I do like what Glennon said.
You gotta like that from a fantasy football.
Might be his last chance at an NFL start. So he's gonna let it rip.
You know he's gonna be playing Bon Jovi's "Blaze of Glory" on repeat pregame.
Nice.
Over and over.
I like a guy that's self-aware enough to know this might be my last chance in the NFL.
Yeah.
That's Mike Glennon. A one bonus take a chance on me player I want to throw out to you guys: Vanderbilt's kicker, Sarah Fuller.
Yeah,
it's awesome. I can only hope she gets in the game. She makes her kicks. It would be fantastic.
Yep.
We are rooting for Vanderbilt kicker Sarah Fuller this weekend. She will be our 10th take a chance on me player. More Fantasy Football Weekly coming back in moments. Weekly. Scott Fish, Brian Johnson, and Paul Charchian. You can follow us on Twitter at... Uh-oh, wait.
Scott Fish 24.
Ah, I always think it's 23.
I know.
Scott Fish 24.
Nope.
Brian.
Ken Griffey Jr., not Don Mattingly.
Oh. I don't blame you, honestly. If it comes down to those two. At Brian Johnson's at BTXJ, and I'm at Paul Charchian. We've got a number of matchups to get to over the course of this segment, beginning with Tennessee taking on Indianapolis. This is a tricky matchup for Tennessee, and particularly in the passing game.
Yeah, and that's why I have Ryan Tannehill on the bench. It's a tough draw for him. Tannehill has failed to top 260 yards in five straight, and the Colts have allowed the fourth fewest passing yards to quarterbacks. Not a good spot. Tannehill, multiple touchdowns in all but two games. Both Stafford and Rodgers had good games against the Colts, but this last 4 or 5 weeks for Tannehill, I just can't trust it.
Yep.
I am giving C grades to A.J. Brown and Corey Davis, though. Brown has scored in 6 of his 7. I know he's a little dinged up, but he should be fine. Outside of the one dud game.
Which was against Indianapolis two weeks ago. Yep. And he dropped the sideline bomb that he likely would have housed.
Yep. I did have it in here that he went 1 for 21 in that game. Besides that one dud game, he's been very, very solid in all other games. Davis had 5 for 67 in that game, a very solid, startable C-grade stat line. He's actually been in that range in 4 of the last 5 games. Led the Titans in targets for the last 5 games, which is surprising. So C-grade there. Jonnu Smith, he basically needs to be saved by touchdowns to be relevant. In fact, Firkser has more catches over the last 5 weeks than Jonnu Smith does.
He is a tight end dependent.
A touchdown dependent
tight end right
now. Which is ridiculous considering how skilled he is.
I agree completely, of course. You know how I feel about this with Jonnu. But let me mention this. He does have more touchdowns than any tight end except Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And it's not bad.
And
you're a touchdown dependent tight end.
Yeah.
That helps.
Yeah. Doesn't hurt to run him in too. I have an A grade on Henry. I don't think it matters anymore who he plays. And DeForest Buckner is on the COVID list, so he'll be out for this game in the middle of that defense that Henry should be able to run up. Colts have allowed 9 rushing touchdowns. All 3 backs with 17 or more touches, top 90 yards. Henry averages like 24 a game. Mm. He's going to get his. On the other side, you like Philip Rivers this week.
He's
your take a chance on me player. Rightly so. I have an A grade on Michael Pittman. His first A grade on the show.
No, it is his first.
Yeah. As you can imagine, the Titans are just as bad against wide receivers as Charch mentioned they were in the past against the pass with his take a chance on me.
Mm-hmm.
Second most receptions, fourth most yards allowed to wide receivers. 2 weeks ago, Pittman broke out with 7 catches for 101 yards against this very same defense. A grade there. Burton, Ali Cox, Doyle, tight ends, they're on the bench. They're splitting too much.
They are.
Taylor and Hines. Right after they say Hines is going to get the workload.
I know, they don't.
Taylor gets 26 touches. I do have a C grade on both here, hoping that Hines can get just enough out of the air and Taylor maintains that 20 touch load.
Well, Titans, which is no guarantee.
It's no guarantee, but you could probably rack Taylor up for double digits regardless. He gets those in his down games usually. Titans are really, really bad against pass catching backs, one of the worst in the league. And Hines has topped 35 yards through the air and a couple of grabs in every single game but one. And so I have C grades on both of them.
Okay. San Francisco takes on the Rams. The Rams have become the best overall defense in the NFL. Colts are close. I think it's Colts-Rams, 1 and 2. And also, as you're looking at your San Francisco players, watch for left tackle Trent Williams' COVID status. If he cannot go in this one, it hurts in an already difficult matchup. Almost everybody becomes unplayable, I think, at that point. C grade right now on Raheem Mostert, who comes back here. Now, what's not clear is in his first game back, is he ready to withstand a big workload or not? Yes.
I was just going to say with Mostert, remember Micah Kizer, their leading tackler in the linebacking corps, is out.
Is out for the Rams.
For the Rams.
Yes, which has helped.
It was probably in your notes, and I just, sorry.
That's okay. There's a tough matchup for Raheem Mostert. The Rams allowing only an average of 75 rushing yards per game. That's seventh fewest, and 0.4 touchdowns, second fewest to opposing running backs. They've been even better lately. Noah Back has topped 48 rushing yards since all the way back to week six. And Raheem Mostert, who had 65 yards, which is just okay, and only 3.8 yards per carry, which is about what I expect in this game for Mostert. The only other player I have a starting grade on is tight end Jordan Reed. It's because he's a tight end, we don't have a lot of options.
Right.
The Rams are playing wideouts so well, the Niners might just choose to send the ball to Jordan Reed, go to the tight end instead. In the earlier matchup, George Kittle went berserk, monster game against the Rams, 10-catch game. That said, Reed is not George Kittle. Mm-mm. And Kittle's big game is the only high-volume tight end game the Rams have allowed all season long. So just a C grade on Jordan Reed, it's a dart throw there. Everybody else is on the bench. Nick Mullins is a backup quarterback against the NFL's best pass defense. That's not good. Deebo Samuel is trying to overcome a hamstring injury. And if he does start, he projects to draw Jalen Ramsey. That's death to him. And then for Brandon Ayuk, he needs to clear the COVID protocol before we even know if he can go. And then he might get Jalen Ramsey if Deebo Samuel doesn't go. Let's just not play any of them.
Right.
That'd be one of the worst Super Bowl hangovers in history. The 49ers are suffering through this.
Yeah, well, and, you know, in fairness, I mean, all the injuries offensively and defensively, it's gone ugly fast for them. I was optimistic it wouldn't go this way, but it has. Let's go over to the Rams side, and beginning with the passing game, let's start with Jared Goff, who gets a C grade. In back-to-back games, we've gotten good Jared, and when he's good, you want to believe in that guy. And he had a 300-yarder against Seattle, monster game against Tampa. But then when he looks bad like he did in the earlier matchup with San Francisco here, like you just want to gouge your eyes out. And the Niners may get Richard Sherman back for this game. Mm-hmm. That could be a serious game changer for that defense. Even without Sherman since the opener, San Francisco's pass defense has been very good. They're giving up the second fewest passing yards without Sherman. Three quarterbacks, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson, those are three good quarterbacks, have scored two-thirds of the touchdowns given up by the Niners all year. The other eight quarterbacks are averaging 149 yards and 0.7 touchdowns. Jared Goff is not in the caliber of Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. So I think he is potentially sitting on a dud game here, just a C grade for him. B grade on Cooper Kupp. Over the past three games, Kupp has seen 40 targets, and he's averaging 102 yards. The problem is, he's never found success against the 49ers. In four career games against San Francisco, Kupp has topped out at just 31 yards as his best game against the Niners. That includes his 11-yard game against San Francisco earlier this year. In the slot, he matches up with Jamar Taylor. It's a neutral matchup. Taylor allows a lot of catches, but he does not give up big games.
I think Kwan Williams might be back for this one after they reversed his suspension, too.
That would be very helpful. Not for the Rams.
No,
that would be very helpful for the 49ers.
Cooper Kupp, yeah.
Yes. Robert Woods gets a C grade in this one under the assumption that Richard Sherman returns because Woods only runs 11% of his plays on the other side of the field, which means he'd be on the Sherman side. Upgrade Woods to a B without Sherman, though. Some good news. Woods has tallied 100 yards or a touchdown in each of the past three meetings against San Francisco, so he's been successful here. In the Week 6 meeting, he only had four catches for 29 yards, but he did score a touchdown. Now, let's talk about all the people on the bench. All the Rams runners on the bench. Since Week 8, get this. And this tells you why you can't trust these guys. Since Week 8, Cam Akers, Darrell Henderson, Malcolm Brown have split touches exactly in thirds. It's impossible to trust any low-volume back against a very good 49ers run defense, allowing the fifth fewest rushing yards and the eighth fewest touches per game. Henderson posted a decent game against the Niners in the earlier meeting, but Akers wasn't getting the ball back then. So I don't trust any of them here, and they're all on the bench. And the two tight ends, same deal. They cannibalize each other. They are on the bench as well. I feel like I might have missed anybody. Nope, I got everybody. That's all the Rams. All right, let's go to Miami, taking on the New York Jets. Brian, for Miami, we have some changes at the running back position.
Yeah, Salvin Ahmed probably not going to play.
He's out. He's ruled out now.
Ruled out. So we're looking at Patrick Laird, DeAndre Washington.
They might be able to get Miles Gaskin back.
Gaskin might come back.
Come off IR, but
that's. I think he's your. I think they're going to press him into service.
I do too. Full time service.
Maybe not full time, but I feel like
they don't like the other backs. That's why
I do too. They shouldn't.
They flat out got rid of Jordan Howard.
It feels like a week to go all in on one of them because it seems like it's going to be a platoon in my mind.
And the Jets' run defense has actually shaped up quite nicely over the last month, and it's not as easy of a run matchup for Miami as it is a pass matchup.
No, yeah, the opportunities are there for running backs. New York is one of 12 teams with an opponent rushing play percentage north of 43%. They've also yielded the most red zone targets to running backs, so that plays into the pass game. But again, pick your poison. It's probably Gaskin if you're going to go with one of these three guys, but I think you just got to see how this pans out and move forward with the Miami backs next week. Speaking of more questionable players, Tua Tagovailoa probably will play. Can assume he does with a thumb injury.
Yeah.
Going to give him a C. The Jets have allowed the third most passing yards and the 10th most passing touchdowns this year. Seven straight quarterbacks have thrown for 300 yards and or multiple touchdowns against the Jets. Yes, Tua was benched last week, but it was probably more attributed to the thumb injury than his play, which wasn't looking too good. But again, hopefully that was because of the thumb. So a C for Tua, but a very soft one. Devontae Parker, just a B here. Only three catches for 35 scoreless yards in the first meeting. These teams played in week six, by the way. Parker only has one touchdown across his last four games against the Jets and hasn't topped 60 yards against them either during that span. But as long as the game script isn't completely flipped, Miami won this game 24-0 in the first matchup. So there was like no need for offense, really, on the Miami side. Parker should be fine against the Jets, though, if the script is not flipped. The Jets recently lost starting corners Blason Austin-Tyre and Pierre Desir, who just was released, so they didn't really lose him. They jettisoned him.
Yes.
Neither were any good anyway when they were playing, but the Chargers wideouts topped 200 yards and scored twice against the Jets last week. So a B for Devontae Parker. And Jakeem Grant was your take a chance on
baby.
Wide receiver.
I like the water bug.
Definitely. And again, the sneaky sneaky daily angle with a guy like Grant is he returns kicks as well, and you pair him with the defense, you can double up on that bonus. Mike Gesicki, going to give him a C, has put up at least 40 yards in three straight games and has recorded at least four targets in each of those games as well. Of all the tight ends to garner at least four targets against the Jets, and that's a lot of them, only one has failed to hit 60 yards or score a touchdown. But keep in mind, Gesicki was blanked in the first meeting, but again, Miami did not need much offense in that one. Over to the Jets side, real quick, Frank Gore is my take-a-chance made running back. He'd probably be a bell cow in his sixth revenge game of the season. Jamison Crowder finds himself in a very crowded wide receiver room all of a sudden. Give him a C, though. Target totals of 2 and 3 since returning from injury, but that was with Joe Flacco. Sam Darnold is going to make his return. Cooper Kupp and Keenan Allen have topped 100 yards or scored against Miami in recent weeks from the slot, so Crowder gets a C. I'm going to bench Breshad Perriman and Denzel Mims. Perriman is coming on strong, was developing a nice rapport with Flacco, but those days are over. He had three touchdowns over his last two games. Perriman probably sees a lot of Xavien Howard, who is ranked fifth in coverage among cornerbacks by Pro Football Focus. And Mims, again, a guy we like on the show, an up-and-coming prospect, but not this week. Keep him on your bench, but make sure he is rostered. And then Sam Darnold will make his return. Did not play in the first meeting. That was a Flacco game, but we got to see something first from Sam before we insert him into our starting lineup. Maybe a few times before.
Exactly. I think we need to see a lot before we put him in starting lineups. We have a moment or two before the break. Scott, among running backs, there's a hierarchy of Derrick Henry, Dalvin Cook, maybe Aaron Jones, Alvin Kamara as four elite backs. Is Antonio Gibson the next backup?
Is he
roughly top five at this point?
He's getting there. And it's weird because he's one of those guys that we kind of saw this extreme. We were like, either he's going to bust or he's going to be big because he's such an athletic specimen and so good in the receiving game that he's not being used in yet. So once McKissick leaves town or they figure out to use, like, I think Gibson is still just, he's learning how to be an early down NFL running back, and he's big enough to handle that load. Once he gets his full game around him, I think it's absolutely possible.
Yeah, I do too. That kid is going to be very good.
I've seen this thrown around out there, and I think it's absolutely right. He's kind of like this year's Miles Sanders. Miles Sanders did it in the receiving game, and now he's got the full complement. This year, Gibson's doing the running game, and he'll get the receiving later.
He's a converted wide receiver, for Pete's sake. Throw him the ball.
Yeah.
Who would you, if you're Washington and you're Ron Rivera and Scott Turner, who would you rather have get the ball in space at the end of a reception? J.D. McSuckett or Antonio Gibson?
He's back to McSuckett now.
When I need him to sound bad,
McKissick's making it work, and I think they want Gibson to focus on learning this role, and that's why he hasn't gotten it yet, but it's coming.
Yeah, I think it is coming. If you want a further deep dive on all of our player rankings, explanations, we encourage you to go to GuillotineLeagues.com. All of my player rankings are there. Explanations for most of the key players, updated, usually up to the minute as well. And there's so many moving parts this week. We encourage you to go to GuillotineLeagues.com. When we come back, three tough questions for a panel of experts. You get to play along, see if you can go 3-0 on Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back, Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Brian Johnson with you. This is a game we call Three Tough Questions. I will pepper my co-hosts with three tough questions. They will try to get them right. You'll try to get them right. Play along, see if you can go 3-0.
Tough question number one.
Dalvin Cook's playoff schedule is brutal. Should his owners trade him? Scott.
Yes, definitely. If you're the fantasy manager that's definitely going to miss the playoffs and you're done with the season and you don't care, sure, why not? It's a Mike McCarthy move, Matt Patricia move. It's mostly an Adam Gase move. Just trade Cook and, you know, let's make our team worse for no good reason. The way this year is going, a healthy back getting 20-plus touches, I don't care what the matchup is. I'm keeping Dalvin Cook on my roster. I know you could probably get a decent amount for him, but I just trust him through even through the bad matchups.
Okay.
In most scenarios, the answer is no. Many, many scenarios, just you hold on to Dalvin Cook. But since there are a couple, I'll have to make my answer yes. You should trade Dalvin Cook if you're really on the outside looking in, but you're clinging to playoff hopes. You have no right to be there, but you are because of Dalvin Cook. And if you can, and I never like doing a 3-for-1 or a 2-for-1 where I'm heavy or I'm getting two or three players for one, but if you basically have no chance to make the playoffs, but you could, but you want to bolster yourself up and based on the bad matchups, if I can get a QB1 and a wide receiver one and like an RB2 for Dalvin Cook, and someone's going to pay that.
That's the right hedge. If you need depth, you can get a lot.
But if you're already going to be in the playoffs, I have no problem starting Dalvin Cook in those matchups if he's healthy. But I guess that's my answer is yes, though. Yes, you should trade Dalvin Cook in some instances.
Week 14, he faces Tampa. Tampa is number one defense.
They're tough.
In yards allowed, number one defense in yards per carry, number three in fantasy points allowed. Then week 15, Vikings have the Bears. This is the easy game. The Bears have given up the second fewest touchdowns to running backs. Then, week 16, if you get that far for the championship game, all you have to do is play the Saints. The Saints are number two in yards allowed and number one in fantasy points allowed.
Mm-hmm.
Their last 100-yard game was allowed to a runner was 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yep.
Who did it, Scott?
Samaje Perine.
Go figure. Now, if the offensive line for the Vikings were better, I'd be defiant, and I would just say, you know what? They're going to run on that team. They're going to run through those teams anyway. But I don't see that in this Vikings offensive line. This is not a team that can just exert their will that way. And if you've got Cook, you're probably headed to the playoffs because Cook has powered you to the playoffs. You don't need week 12 wins. You don't need week 13 wins. You're playing to get to the playoffs and then go get the championship. You need three straight wins in the playoffs. Is Dalvin Cook and the Vikings going to dud in any of those three matchups? Well, probably yes. In any of them, he could.
The Chicago and Minnesota played in week 10. Cook had 96 yards. That's great rushing yards on 30 carries.
30 carries. Yeah, it's 3.3 per carry.
Yeah, no touchdowns, of course. So.
Right. This is all about getting to a win at the end of week 16, and you can't have your best player hitting you with a dud in one of those weeks. So you can name your price on Cook. When you dial up the Derrick Henry owner and offer him Dalvin Cook, he's got to think about that offer.
That's like the one-for-one you can
That's the one-for-one you can do.
Maybe Kelsey.
Listen to what Derrick Henry's got in the playoffs. Jacksonville, Detroit, yeah. Green Bay. Yeah. That's money right yeah. there.
Nobody's Derrick Henry is going to win a lot of leagues.
He's going to win a lot of leagues. And that's a trade you might be able to pull off right now. You could trade for Aaron Jones. He's got Detroit, Carolina, Tennessee. Very favorable. You could trade for Josh Jacobs. Hope he gets through Indy so he can get the Chargers and the Dolphins. Alvin Kamara, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Minnesota. There are other options. All you care about at this stage, if you have Dalvin Cook and you're going to the playoffs, is getting to week 16.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he can not hit you with duds in three straight brutal matchups.
Tough question number two.
Washington head coach Ron Rivera says that he'd like Alex Smith to be his quarterback next year. For Terry McLaurin's Keeper League, Dynasty League, Empire League managers, does this hurt, help, or really neither? Brian.
Well, we can just throw help out the window. No one's ever been like, oh, we got Alex Smith. That's really going to bode well for my wide receiver one next year. So it's between hurt and neither. So since 2013, Alex Smith has had three full-ish seasons with 20-plus passing touchdowns. In 2013, 2015, and 2017, he finished with 23, 20, and 26 passing touchdowns. So he's not been a great quarterback from a fantasy perspective, but has been able to support a wide receiver one in those years. In 2013, Jamaal Charles led the team in catches, yards, and receiving touchdowns. I think that was the year he had like five receiving touchdowns against the Raiders, though, or something like that. But Dwayne Bowe was the leading wide receiver that year. His numbers were not spectacular, so not off to a good start. But in 2015, Jeremy Maclin led the team with 87 catches, 1,100 yards, and 8 touchdowns. Those are wide receiver one numbers. And in 2017, and Travis Kelce was in the mix that year for Maclin. He hadn't quite popped off like we've seen him now. But in 2017, Tyreek Hill, 75 catches, 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns with a very explosive Travis Kelce in the lineup. So Smith has supported wide receiver one numbers. And what we've seen so far, he's locked in on Terry McLaurin. And if he does that next year, I think it cannot hurt him with Alex Smith as his quarterback.
All right.
First off, that's Amaje Perine's stat, courtesy of Adam Azer. I like to credit where credit is due.
Okay.
On this one, though, I actually kind of disagree that I think it can help him because it's a lot more consistency from Alex Smith than what he's had to deal with at the quarterback position previously. They've played 3 3/4 games. So Alex Smith came in after the first quarter or at the very, very, very end of the first quarter of a game. So he played 3/4 of one game and then 3 straight games. McLaurin's worst game of those 4, 5 for 84 from Alex Smith. The Alex Smith in that game threw 5 for 92 and a score in that 3/4. And then he's been 84 or more and 5 or more catches in the 3 after that. I did put neither, though, because, you know, there's going to have to be some duds coming. It will happen. But he was very up and down with the hodgepodge. So I think it's right middle of the road. It's definitely not like a stud young quarterback that they can grow with and he can be a target hog like air bear to Keenan Allen. But he's going to be just fine.
Having Alex Smith as the quarterback next year for those in keeper leagues, dynasty leagues, empire leagues hurts. McLaurin isn't producing any better statistically under Smith than he was under Dwayne Haskins or Kyle Allen. It's all been the same. And with Smith's age and diminishing arm, he's not able to unlock the best in McLaurin. The sooner Washington finds a young, talented quarterback, the sooner McLaurin becomes a bonkers elite top five receiver.
To be fair, I don't think he's ever had the arm that's been one that's to diminish, actually. You actually have to have a presence in the arm for it to diminish.
My problem with those other quarterbacks were their averages. He had a bunch of under 40-yard games. With Alex Smith, he's never been under 84.
Well, he's only had one game under 61 yards all year. One game.
That's true.
That's it.
But so I'm looking at last year.
It's performed the same with all of them. Here's what we want. Look at Keenan Allen under Phillip Rivers and Tyrod Taylor, mm-hmm. and look at Keenan Allen under Air Bear. This is what we want for Terry McLaurin, arguably the most talented receiver in the league. I mean, just from a talent standpoint, get a quarterback who can unlock his potential, he's going to languish as this second-tier receiver. You have to get that young guy, and killing years with Alex Smith doesn't get you where you want to be when you're a keeper league, dynasty league, or empire league manager.
Luckily, tough question number three.
Luckily, Washington's on pace for a top five pick or a bottom 20 pick. Bottom 50 yeah,
could go any direction, yeah. Right?
Tough and so question is the whole division. Number three. Tough question number three.
One more.
Do we sabotage drop every Ram and Buccaneer running back? Scott.
I don't know how to even answer this because...
Well, this is a yes-no question, so I'll tell you how to answer it.
What you're asking is barely possible. Like, the type of fantasy manager that would pick up a Bucs or Rams running back probably has a dumpster fire going on already. So you're just throwing a match into a dumpster fire that they already have. I really don't want anything to do with them, even though the Rams, like, playoff schedule is very good. Like, if one of them can separate themselves, that would be a nice... stash, but I'd rather have nothing to do with those backs right now.
Brian, can we sabotage drop every Rams and Buccaneer running back?
The Rams, definitely, yes. That's easy. And even though between Leonard Fournette and Ronald Jones, there's been like six instances where it's like the stars have perfectly aligned for it to be player X's week, but then it's player Y who goes off. If I roster both of them, and in
both of them meaning
Fournette and Jones, I will hold and just hope one can truly establish himself. And it's probably gonna have to come through injury.
It would have to be. Yeah.
So that's I guess I will say I'm gonna say yes, even though in that one rare instance it would be a no. But yes, you can drop them all though. They're trash.
Yes, you can sabotage drop every Rams and Buccaneer running back. Does this mean that every Rams and Buccaneer running back is terrible? No, it doesn't. Does this mean that none of them will ever have a good game? No, some of them will have good games. Will you be able to predict which player is going to have a good game and when? No, no, you're not. And you're going to get it wrong way more than you're going to get it right. The playoffs are almost here. And in the playoffs, you have to win three games in a row. Can you imagine starting any Ram or Buccaneer player running back?
With any confidence?
For three games in a row?
No.
Then nobody's going to produce three games in a row for those teams. No Ram or Buccaneer running back has a starting grade this week, which tells you plenty as well.
Right.
You're not starting them this week. You're not starting them beyond. Yes, you can sabotage, drop them all. Let's work in one more matchup into this segment, and it is the Chargers taking on Buffalo. Scott, for the Chargers, Justin Herbert has become an unbenchable commodity.
Yes. He's unbenchable. I gave him the A grade just because he's so unbenchable. He's a guy who has 300 plus yards and or multiple touchdowns in. Let me check my notes on this one again. Every single game he's played.
Unbelievable.
So it doesn't matter. Bills are actually bottom five against quarterbacks, but it's mostly because they've allowed a ton of rushing stuff to quarterbacks that has put them there. And Herbert's usually like a 10 to 20 yards guy. So don't count on that, but I trust Herbert right now. Keenan Allen, A grade. He's averaging 10 plus targets per game with Herbert. Leads the NFL in targets and receptions. You can't bench him. C grade for Williams, has at least four catches in five of the last six. And in those five games, he averaged 19 yards per reception, good for 80 yards and scored four times.
Yeah.
Second wide receiver has four catches or more in the last seven Bills games.
Now, you don't think Mike Williams is going to get Tre'Davious White coverage in this one?
It's possible, but how many wide receivers do you think are better at contested catches in the NFL than Mike Williams?
Not many. He's so big. They go up and get it. Ball.
I said this. What was it last year? I think it was last year with Kenny Galladay when he went up against White. I said, I don't care. Contested catches, they can overcome that.
Yeah.
So I trust in Mike Williams for the C grade here. Henry, I got a B grade too. The problem with Henry is he hasn't topped 50 yards since week three.
Oof.
That's what gets me with this. Otherwise, the Bills have allowed the most receptions, most yards, and third most touchdowns to tight ends. They haven't allowed quite as much since week six, but they faced Chris Herndon, Ryan Izzo, Jacob Hollister, and Dan Arnold. So I will go more with what they did early in the year.
Right. Against real tight ends.
Or against better tight ends.
Right.
The tight ends that are more on par with Henry in that early part average 7.5 catches and 80 yards and a touchdown. So that's where they give it up. The running back position is where it's really tough for this one. Eckler might play. He probably won't, but he might. Ballage probably not going to play, but he might. He's been hurt all week. The internet doctors don't think he's going to go. If Ballage goes, I'm starting him because he's got 16 plus touches in three straight. Good for 70 to 100 yards in each. That's right along with what the Bills are doing. All the starters they allowed 15 plus touches to did 70 to 120 yards. You can count on that. If not, it's going to be Pope and Kelly. It's Tremaine Pope's birthday on
Sunday. That's your angle and right there.
Yeah, and he had more touches than Joshua Kelly the one game that the game before Ballage really took over. So maybe, but I have them both on the bench. I don't know who to trust if Ballage is out.
No.
So on
I'd like to think at this point, nobody listening has to start Tremaine Pope.
Yeah, that would be that's really reaching. But the running back landscape, man,
it's bad.
Yeah, on the other side, Josh Allen, John Brown is going to be out for this game, so it makes it a little rougher for Allen. But the Chargers have allowed multiple touchdowns in five straight. None of them top 250 yards, but Allen has 750 total yards and six touchdowns in the last two games. He's really coming on strong right now. Diggs, you're not benching him. I got an A grade there. Second in the NFL in targets, receptions, and yards. Double-digit PPR points in, let me check my notes on this one,
every single game.
He only has one game with fewer than six catches.
Yeah, it's amazing.
He just gets it done. I do have a C grade on Gabriel if John Brown sits. He has produced in the games John Brown has been gone. 5 for 58, won all three of those games over 50 yards, caught three touchdowns. Like, he's produced.
Wow.
One of his touchdowns was not in one of those games. It was in a game that John Brown left early, but like a 6-yard touchdown or whatever. Beasley, I'm putting on the bench just because he's been so hit or miss. With John Brown out, he might see a little extra work, but I dig Gabriel a little bit more here. Moss? Zach Moss, you know that guy?
I am familiar, and I kind of like him in this matchup.
I do. I have a B grade on him. Moss has out-touched Singletary in two straight games, out-snapped him in three straight. He's the guy you want to start against the Chargers defense that has allowed eight touchdowns to running backs in just the last five games. Six running backs over 60 yards in that five-game stretch as well. I have Singletary on the bench.
Yeah, Cody Ford is going to be out for the rest of the season, which is a loss to that Bills offensive line, but still hoping that they have an opportunity to get something done here. And this might be, for those that were patient with Zach Moss, this might be your chance to finally get the big payoff.
Only had to wait 12 weeks.
Yeah, that's right. You need to wait 12 weeks.
He had a couple stops.
He's been okay, you know, more so lately. Yeah. I know that first half of the season was tough. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to get paid on Zach Moss.
I believe in the preseason you called him a league winner. It's coming.
That's right. I meant at the end. That's right. Meant in the fantasy playoffs. It's exactly what we meant. When we come back, Kansas City takes on Tampa Bay. Tough matchup for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Do you start him here? We'll tell you when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Charchi and Scott Fish and Brian Johnson with you. Another block of matchups beginning with Kansas City taking on Tampa Bay. Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, all A's. I'm not going to spend much time on any of those three guys because you're going to start them no matter what. The Bucs secondary is a middle of the pack group that eventually yields big games most of the time. They've given up multiple passing touchdowns in five straight games. Mahomes should be fine here. Tyreek Hill, obvious A grade as well, and a fantastic matchup against slumping slot corner Sean Murphy Bunting. Hill could be sitting on a very big game. And Travis Kelce, always an A grade. He's red hot right now. The bigger conundrum is really Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with him in this situation?
Matchup.
Very tough. No back has managed to top 60 rushing yards against the Bucs. And that's a team that has faced Christian McCaffrey at full health, Aaron Jones, Josh Jacobs, Alvin Kamara, and Alvin Kamara again. And none of them top 60 rushing yards. Tampa's number one in yards per carry allowed at 3.3. They've yielded the most receptions to running backs, though. But Clyde isn't even getting that involved in the passing game, averaging just three catches for 23 yards through the air. If you are cool with 50 total yards, which is what I think you're going to get out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire, ground and air, and no touchdown, okay, C grade. That's about where I think he finishes on this one. The receivers are on the bench, and Sammy Watkins comes back for this, and I think that muddies the water for Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson. Those guys were quasi-viable dart throws while Watkins was out, but now Watkins comes back, fewer balls to go around. I don't know how much Watkins is going to play, but enough that I think you're not going to want to start any of them, and they start cannibalizing each other. Watkins was also very unreliable after his big week one, which he always has, and then after that, he was mostly miss then hit. All right, now let's go to the Buccaneers side. The Bucs may be without guard Ali Marpet, who's got trying to get through the concussion protocol, and he might, and tackle Donovan Smith, who's got an ankle injury. Those, if they're both out, that's a sizable loss for this offensive line. Let's start with Tom Brady. He gets a B grade. Accepting his inexplicable dud against the Saints on national television, Brady's been very good and occasionally explosive. Multiple touchdowns in five of the past six games. The addition of Antonio Brown stretches opposing secondaries very thin, even a good one like Kansas City. And Brady's got some positive matchups with his receivers, beginning with Antonio Brown. A grade. Each week, Antonio Brown's getting more and more attention from Tom Brady, and he's turned into the number one target. He led the team last week with 13 targets, averaging just 52 yards, though, in the three games with his Bucs. It hasn't translated to a lot of production, but it might here because most often he's going to get coverage from Charvarius Ward, who's allowing a passer rating of 115. He's given up three touchdowns in his coverage. This is the best matchup, one-on-one matchup Antonio Brown has seen. So I'm giving him an A grade in this game. Mike Evans gets a B grade. The one thing we can count on from the Buccaneers offense is that Mike Evans is the red zone target. He has seen 13 targets from inside the 10-yard line, which is crazy. That's the most. And he has scored 8 of his 9 touchdowns from inside the 10-yard line. That's some dependable. He's really a goal line back. He's the Larry Kinnebrew of receivers.
It's unreal.
More often, Evans is going to have a tricky matchup with Bashaud Breeland, but I think he gets into the end zone here, so I do have a B grade on him. The guy who Antonio Brown's killing is Chris Godwin.
Yep.
He should be playing through a finger injury, but Antonio Brown's targets are coming right out of Godwin. With Brown in the lineup, Godwin has fallen to third in the pecking order, trailing both Brown and Evans in targets over the last three games. He's failed to reach 55 yards since Brown showed up in two of the three since Brown showed up. I'm nervous about him in this matchup as well. C grade for him. And then the last of the receivers to talk about is Rob Gronkowski. Like Godwin, Gronk's numbers are also down since Brown arrived. And increasingly, Gronk has got to divvy up looks with Cameron Brate, who annoyingly is on the field for about 40% of the plays. The low volume means that Gronk is touchdown dependent. Good tight ends have generally fared well against Kansas City. They've given up two tight end touchdowns last week, so I've got a C grade on Gronk, and you can start him. On the bench, though, are the runners. As I alluded to last segment, Ronald Jones, Leo Fournette. For Jones, if you take away his improbable 98-yard touchdown run against Carolina, he's averaging only 37 rushing yards over the last 5 weeks and only one touchdown over the last 5 weeks. So don't get fooled by the highlight here. Predominantly, he's been a struggling runner. Kansas City's run defense has been a lot better over the last 6 weeks. No back has topped 77 yards, and they've only allowed three rushing touchdowns in those six games. Leonard Fournette's normally a safe play for some PPR production, but the Chiefs have been awesome against pass-catching runners.
And he dropped 5 balls last week.
He did. Wasn't that something?
Ugh.
Only one runner, Christian McCaffrey, has scored a receiving touchdown against Kansas City. So Fournette's on the bench. Our next matchup, the New York Giants taking on the Cincinnati Bengals. Brian, I told you I liked Wayne Gallman in the running game. What do you think about the passing game here? Daniel Jones has got a chance against a reeling Cincinnati secondary.
Yeah, there's some angles here with the passing game. Let's start with Danny Dimes' pass catchers. Darius Slayton and Sterling Shepard are going to give them both a C, but they both have B upside here. Outside of the opener, the Bengals have surrendered at least one wide receiver touchdown in every game and 7 wide receiver touchdowns over their last 3 games alone. So there's opportunity for both of these guys to produce. Shepard sees more targets, averaging 8 per game over his last 3, but Slayton has 5 catches in back-to-back games, arguably the higher ceiling, too, for Slayton. So Shepard, the safer PPR guy, but Slayton has a pretty safe floor and a high ceiling here. Evan Engram, a pretty high ceiling as well, has 9 or more targets in 3 of his last 4 games. The Bengals are allowing the 9th most receptions and 4th most yards to tight ends, who have also scored 6 touchdowns on the season. That's a healthy number, so a B for Evan Engram. And a very safe C for Daniel Jones. The Bengals have surrendered multiple passing touchdowns in 6 of their last 7 games, at least 3 passing touchdowns in 3 of their last 4 games. Mm. Alex Smith was the only quarterback who failed to throw multiple scores during that 7-game span. And they really haven't faced a ton of mobile quarterbacks. Lamar Jackson didn't run much in a blowout win against the Bengals, but Carson Wentz had 9 carries for 65 yards and a rushing touchdown against the Bengals. And Jones can run for at least 90 yards. We know that.
That's right.
And then his legs give out. But we'll take a 90-yard run. But get in the end zone next time if you got that much daylight, Danny. And like you said, Charge Wayne Gallman. Gallman, take a chance on me. Running back over to the Bengals side.
By the way, do you have a grade on him? I'd give him a B grade.
Yeah, definitely. He's usually I put a C on Take-Om guys, but he's a B Take-Om this week for sure.
I looked since we talked last about Wayne Gallman. He's my number 14 running back at the moment.
Yeah, he looks pretty good. Gio Bernard has not really looked so good with Joe Mixon injured. He is in concussion protocol. He looks like he's trending towards playing. You got to monitor that for sure. If he doesn't go, it's Samaje Perine, the aforementioned Samaje Perine. I don't know if you've ever said that before.
What are the odds?
On this show. Whoever can get significant touches is in a decent spot against the Giants. Going to give them both a C. Whoever gets the start, basically, will get a C here. The Giants have allowed 3 rushing touchdowns to running backs over the last 2 weeks, and since week 6, opposing backs have averaged nearly 7.5 catches and 60 receiving yards per game against New York. So a C for whoever ends up starting at running back for the Bengals. Just a C for Tyler Boyd. He's been at least a B every week this year, considering he has 6 or more catches in 4 straight games. But it's Brandon Allen time now. It's not Joe Burrow. Mm. And Giants rookie slot corner Darnay Holmes has held opponents scoreless through his last 9 games. So just a C for Boyd. Mm. And I got T. Higgins on the bench. He had worked his way into every week starter status.
Yeah, I know. But what do you do now?
Before last Sunday's game, he was among rookie receivers 3rd in receptions, 2nd in yards, and 2nd in touchdowns. But now he's got Brandon Allen on the bench, and he's going to see the most of James Bradbury. Most likely. So Higgins is on the bench. A.J. Green will not be seeing James Bradbury. There are 18 players right now with at least 8 end zone targets this year.
Okay.
And all of them have caught at least 2 end zone touchdowns. Most have at least 4 or 5. Except A.J. Green. He's the only player among those 18 players.
He's been targeted.
9 end zone targets, 0 end zone touches.
9 times.
Wow.
9.
Yeah. That is not a good ratio.
Not a good 9
times. 0 out
there.
Of 9.
I will say there's a little hole. Brandon Allen made Tim Patrick and Courtland Sutton valuable a few times.
It's better than Ryan Finley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the principal's name. It's not Mooney in Ferris Bueller.
No, I think it was Principal.
Is it Mooney?
That sounds right, Mooney.
Well, he's more disappointed in those 9 times than the 9 times Ferris has missed school, that's for sure. And Brandon Allen on the bench. Duh. Mm.
Seattle takes on Philadelphia, Scott. Chris Carson may come back for this game.
Sounds like he will.
But it's a tough matchup against a really good run defense.
Yeah, I still like Carson, though. When they do have a running back go, they tend to make him the bell cow. They don't flip it up. They don't have multiple guys going. So if he's the lead back, here's an interesting thing. The lead back for Seattle has scored a touchdown every single week since week 3. It's interesting, I think. In fact, week 3 was the only game the lead back didn't score a touchdown this year for Seattle. Hmm. So I think there's a likelihood there. The Eagles are actually they're middle of the pack against running backs running the ball, but one of the best stopping them through the air. Chris Carson does most of his damage running the ball.
Yes.
So that's enough for me to give Chris Carson probably a B in a likelihood 15 plus touches. Hmm. And I think a likelihood for a touchdown. In the passing game, you're not benching Russell Wilson. You're not benching DK Metcalf. Mm-hmm. I still have A grades on both of them. The Eagles have held 8 QBs under 245 yards, and 6 of the 10 they faced had just 1 or fewer touchdowns, but they have not faced Russell Wilson. In fact, the quarterbacks they have faced, let's just say they're not a murderer's row. I won't go through the list. They're not great. Rushing quarterbacks they faced, like Jackson and Jones twice, Daniel Jones twice, all had 60-plus rushing yards, and they combined for 2 scores. Russell Wilson can run, too. So DK Metcalf, also an A grade, scored in all but 3 games, has 90 or more yards in all but 3 games as well. Tyler Lockett, I'm giving a B grade, too. He's top 65 yards in 6 of 10 games. Even his bad games are his are your 4-for-40 types. His boom games are 100 to 200 yards and three touchdowns. So because of that range, that floor of a C grade and the boom of a high A, I'm giving him a B grade right in the middle.
It's very spineless of you.
Very spineless. He gets a decent matchup against Nick Roby Coleman as well. On the other side, Wentz was my take a chance on me quarterback. Rager was my take a chance on me wide receiver.
Mm-hmm.
Boston Scott was my take a chance on me running back. So that leaves us with none of the wide receivers. No more wide receivers. Can't start them. If Ertz goes, and it sounds like he will, I have a C grade on Ertz and Goddard. I think they will share both six plus targets.
Mm-hmm.
The Seahawks haven't faced tight ends like the Eagles have. The Eagles tight ends are on a different platform than most tight ends in the league, really, because they target him so much.
Yeah. Richard Rodgers.
Yeah. Yeah. The Seahawks faced Kittle, but he went down real early in that game. So it's hard to decipher much from that. The Seahawks have allowed a tight end touchdown in three of the last four weeks. So C grades for both of those guys. I think they'll get it done. Sanders, I'm giving a B grade too. The Seahawks have allowed the fourth fewest rushing yards. Seems good, right?
Mm-hmm.
But much like a tight end, they haven't faced anyone. I mean, they faced Elliott on a bad day. Cook and Madison destroyed them. Outside of that, it's like Gurley, Michelle, Drake, Hasty, Akers, Zach Moss on a bad day. So they've allowed the fifth most rushing touchdowns, however, the fourth most running back receptions, and the fifth most running back receiving yards. So it's just rushing yardage that they hold down.
Yeah.
Miles Sanders can do it all over the field. He's going to get 15-plus touches. I got a B grade on him. And one note, we mentioned Wentz earlier has leads in interceptions and fumbles.
Yes.
He also leads in sacks.
Sacks absorbed, yes.
And during one of our breaks, I looked it up. I did not know this beforehand.
Okay.
In 1995, Dave Craig led in interceptions and fumbles.
Did he really?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know that he was the last.
That was an impressive pull right there.
That's a crazy pull.
That is well done.
Yeah, wow. 21 and 16.
How about that?
16 fumbles. That's
a lot of fumbles.
It's not even his worst. His worst was 18.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Man.
Ugh.
You got to be a pretty good quarterback to have anybody trust you to put the ball in your hands continually when you fumble 16 and 18 times in seasons.
Principal Rooney.
Rooney. See, I think what the problem where I'm getting him confused is Darnell Mooney is in Chicago.
Yep,
and that show, you know, that or that the movie was based in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's all blending right there. Abe Froman, the sausage king of Chicago. When we come back, premature speculation. One of our final premature speculations of the year. We're tapping out on these soon. These are players you'll want to pick up this week that other people are going to try to pick up next week. We'll tell you who they are when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Final segment of Fantasy Football Weekly. This is a segment we call Premature Speculation. We'll give you three guys we think you should pick up now that others will be trying to pick up later, but they'll already be on your team. Scott, who is your premature speculation player?
Oh, I'm going with LaVisca Chenault. I think we might be seeing a Chase Claypool thing again where you're going to want him for a few weeks and this week. He's going to play this game against the Browns. They're already missing DJ Chark, and they're missing Chris Conley for that game. He could be started this week. After that, he gets the Vikings and the Titans for your fantasy playoffs. The first 2 weeks at least.
That's not bad.
Seems like good matchups there.
The last rookie wide receiver you did this with was Chase Claypool. I remember you saying you can start him this week, but then he had four touchdowns.
Brian, your premature speculation player.
Not very exciting. I'm just going to say the Titans, Deontay Foreman, who is the backup to Derrick Henry. It's handcuff season, and we're getting there. If you roster Henry, you should probably grab Foreman now. We mentioned the ridiculous schedule when it comes to ease for running backs for the Titans in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're planning on being in the playoffs and you don't roster Derrick Henry, odds are you're going to run into the Derrick Henry owner, and you could essentially end all his hopes right now if you go grab Deonta Foreman, put him on a dead bench spot because, the Henry owner is going to want him, and he's not going to be able to get him.
The Rams have the easiest remaining schedule for wide receivers with three deeply favorable matchups. Week 13 against Arizona, week 15 against the Jets, week 16 against Seattle. Josh Reynolds, available in 92% of leagues, will be a flex starter in three of those games, including the two playoff games. He's on the field 80% of the snaps. Easy matchups. And if anything happens to Kupp or Woods, Josh Reynolds could easily end up being a B grade, A grade player in that scenario. And even if they're healthy, he would make some sense too. Chicago takes on Green Bay. Not a lot to talk about the Chicago side, except, yes, it's the return of Sad Trombonski. He will start for the Bears. If you've forgotten his three starts, he looked good against Detroit in the opener. They looked pretty bad against the Giants, and they got benched in week three. And I'm not expecting a lot here. Just a C grade for Allen Robinson. Robinson crushed division rival Green Bay last season with Trubisky under center, topping 100 yards in both meetings. Robinson will have his work cut out for him against Jaire Alexander, Pro Football Focus's number one rated cornerback, who is allowing less than 20 yards per game in his coverage. Feeding Robinson makes sense anyway, though. Robinson's been able to average 72 yards this season when he's seen at least seven targets. I think Sad Trombonski will hit him plenty. All the rest of the parts of the passing game are off the board with Mitch Trubisky, including Jimmy Graham, who's become a tight end, a touchdown dependent tight end, who has only scored once in the last 5 weeks. And Green Bay's only allowed three tight end touchdowns on the year. David Montgomery is a B grade. He sees 80% of the Bears running back touches. He'll face a bad Packers run defense, allowing 157 total yards to running backs. That is fourth most. Unfortunately, Matt Nagy can't be trusted to go with the obvious best advantage he has on the field, which is running the ball. Nagy's Bears rank dead last in rushing attempts, and that's why I can only give Montgomery a B grade. Let's go over to the Packers side. For Aaron Rodgers, just to be great here, no opposing quarterback has hit 300 yards against Chicago, nor has any thrown more than two touchdowns. Only the Rams have allowed fewer passing yards than Chicago. And even then, the Bears haven't allowed a running back to score through the air. Rodgers retains a B grade here because of Davante Adams, who you have to start every week, and he does get an A grade in this one, even with a tricky matchup. Going to his other receivers, Alan Lazard, C grade. He runs mostly from the slot, where he will see a struggling, busted screen door. He's been dreadful lately. Over the past four games, busted screen door has allowed 75% of his passes to be completed. 95% of the passes to be completed, and four touchdowns in four games. So Alan Lazard, I'm tempted to move him to a B grade right now. Let's keep him C grade. And then Robert Tonyan, five targets last week and a touchdown in a tougher matchup than this one. Chicago's actually been yielding to tight ends, allowing three tight end scores in the past four games. And let's move over to the running game. Aaron Jones, B grade. Despite the painstaking overusage of Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones has garnered at least 15 touches in every game he's played. Jones is in a tough spot here. He goes up against the Bears. They're ranked fourth against the run by Football Outsiders, allowing just seven total touchdowns to running backs. Jamal Williams on the bench, not getting enough work for him to be startable and just getting enough to be a nuisance to Aaron Jones.
Yep.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling, by the way, also on the bench, dealing with an Achilles injury. And I think Lazard is going to eat his lunch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think MVS goes.
Let's go to our next matchup, which is, let me see here. New Orleans and Denver.
Yep, that's the one.
Go. Let's go.
Alvin Kamara, just a B for him. He was clearly banged up last week with the foot injury. Only played 48% of the snap share for the Saints, and he's not out of the woods yet, so I'm a little concerned for Kamara in a bad matchup as well. Only two running backs have top 31 receiving yards against the Broncos. Las Vegas did have four rushing touchdowns against Denver in Week 10, but outside of that game, Denver has only surrendered three other ground scorers to running backs all season, and only one lead back has top 90 rushing yards against Denver since Week 3. So just a B for Kamara. Latavius Murray is on the bench, of course. Michael Thomas, just a B for him here as well. A 52% target share last week, though.
Gotta like that.
Definitely gotta like that.
His owners deserve that.
Yep.
Languishing owners.
But Denver has only allowed two wide receivers to reach 70 yards
yards in their past six games, and most often Thomas will face a very difficult matchup in Bryce Callahan, who is Pro Football Focus's number two rated cornerback and is allowing a passer rating of just 49 in his coverage. Troy B for Michael Thomas. Now Emmanuel Sanders in a revenge game here. I'm pretty torn. At least four catches in five of his last six games, including last week. He has double digit PPR points in all five of those games, but I got to bench him here with Taysom Hill at quarterback. I'm benching Jared Cook to just three catches over his last three games with zero touchdowns. Hasn't topped two catches in seven of his last eight.
Oof.
So, and in the tight end wasteland, you thought at least Jared Cook would stay viable if healthy, but he is not this week. And Taysom Hill, of course, we got to mention him. Just to see, though, Denver has only surrendered one passing touchdown over the last 2 weeks, but anything Hill does... Passing-wise, it's gravy. It's all about the running.
It is.
Just like Cam Newton. And wouldn't you know it, Cam Newton faced the Broncos this year, had 76 rushing yards and a touchdown against Denver. Sam Darnold somehow had 84 rushing yards
and a
touchdown.
Well, he ripped off like a 70-yarder.
Well, that was probably the game we were talking about before.
That's right.
So a C for Hill, but of course he's got A upside. Who knows in this world? Over to the Denver side. Definitely not a lot to talk about. I got Melvin Gordon and Philip Lindsay just on the bench. It's that simple. Don't even mess with these guys this week against New Orleans, allowing only 3.5 yards per carry to running backs. They've only allowed five total touchdowns to the position, both rushing and receiving all season.
Let me just jump in on Gordon and Lindsay for a second. Their playoff run, uber easy. If your trade deadline hasn't come yet and you just want to have some options and flexibility for runners in the playoffs, those are guys you can get.
We don't have time. What if you could only pick up one? And that's a
Lindsay.
That's a next
or
week. Oh, yeah.
Trade Dalvin Cook for both of them.
Stop.
To the receiving game really quick. I like Tim Patrick a lot. I think he's startable this week. He gets a C. The Saints have allowed 12 wide receiver touchdowns this year. That's a lot. Just one over their last three games. But Patrick is startable. He has double-digit PPR points in six of his last seven games. In five of those six games, he's either topped 100 yards and or scored a touchdown. So a C for Tim Patrick.
Good.
Yeah, 6'4", 215. Yeah, good size. I like him. I like him more than Jerry Jeudy. I'll still give Jeudy a C, though.
I think Judy's going to be out.
Is he?
I think so.
I thought if he's out, you're clearly not playing him. If he suits up, be wary. He does have eight targets in four straight games, but he'll see Chauncey Gardner-Johnson in the slot a lot, who is yielding 47 scoreless yards per game. But as Scott said, he might not play, so definitely monitor that. And I'll give Noah Fant a C. Only one tight end has topped two catches or 22 yards against New Orleans over the last four games. That was Jordan Reed. Fant is in that realm, but it's such a wasteland that I'll give Fant a C here when
Fantasy.
There you go.
I like it.
And Drew Lock, my boy, on the bench.
Yeah. Jeudy is questionable. Okay. So we'll see.
Baltimore takes on Pittsburgh and is what is now a Tuesday night game. Let's presume it's going to happen, Scott.
Oh,
and break
boy.
That game down.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So I'll start with the running game.
Yeah. Because it doesn't. Looks like RG3 is going to be our quarterback.
Yeah. It looks like RG3 is going to be the guy. We'll just start there. Whatever. The Steelers are top three against quarterbacks, running backs, and tight ends. Yeah, so this is not a good matchup for anyone on the Baltimore side. The wide receivers, they're not top three against, but the wide receivers for Baltimore are not very good.
No.
They don't get it done. Griffin, I have on the bench. Mark Andrews, I am giving a B grade, though, too. He had 5 for 96 and a score last week, playing 86% of the snaps because Boyle is out for the season. He's basically their only weapon.
Yeah.
So I think he's startable on volume here. He'd probably get a better grade if it was, you know, a different situation. In the running game, though, so Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins have the potential. They have the possibility to play. We won't know that until possibly Sunday or Monday.
Or Tuesday.
So at this point, I'm going to assume they're out. If they are completely out and not playing, I'm giving Edwards a C grade. It's a tough 15-plus touch volume C because it's a terrible matchup. But Edwards has scored in every game he had more than 10 carries. He showed an ability to handle a full load.
He ran through Pittsburgh in the earlier matchup this year.
Yeah, both the end of 2018 and the end of 2019 as well. He did it. So he's a guy that if he gets the volume, I think he's a C grade. If either of those two do play, though, I want nothing to do with the whole backfield.
Yeah.
And likewise, if they don't play, Justice Hill is on the bench. I know they haven't allowed, the Steelers have allowed the fewest running back receptions and the second fewest running back receiving yards. Terrible spot for that, too. on the other side. I barely need to go over this because Big Ben's an A, Johnson's an A, Claypool's a B. I don't care how tough the matchups is. Juju is a C because he's been practicing limited. He's injured. And if history has showed us anything with Juju, he tends to be more of a decoy when he plays hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
So I have a C grade on him. Johnson has 10 plus targets in every full game, over 100 in back-to-back. Claypool, just he can't stop scoring.
It's amazing, isn't it?
With Thielen out, he might get a touchdown and tie Thielen for the league lead at 11 at this point. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I mentioned this last week, they just keep throwing. In fact, the Seahawks and Bengals are the only two teams that pass more when they're tied or ahead.
Hmm.
Eric Ebron is the king of 30 to 50 yard games. He scores half the time. He's scored in three of the last four, so I'm giving him a B grade here. James Conner, C grade on volume. Tough matchup against the Ravens, but if he gets 15, 20 carries, I'm giving him the C.
Yeah, that's about all he's good for is a C these days.
And he needs all of that to do it because he's not producing efficiently.
If you are listening to this show, this episode of Fantasy Football Weekly over the air, know that it is also a podcast. You can podcast it, go back, listen to the entire episode. We're always grateful for those people that rate, review, and subscribe to Fantasy Football Weekly. Best of luck in week 12, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye. Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.